David Lamb, Reel 2. So, Argyle Street camp, this is when all the officers were separated from the men. Is that the time? Yes.
Yeah, according to international convention, officers should be kept separate from the other men. They are not required to work. They will be paid a monthly salary, and then they have to buy their own food. So a second lieutenant's pay was 60 yen per month, but you can't buy anything. They just deduct it from the food they supply. Maybe just rice or yam leaf, and not much in a way. Leave them with 10 yen or something as pocket money. But that 10 yen, you can't buy anything. There's no canteen, nothing to buy. And one day, I was, you know, in the afternoon, I was playing with an empty pipe. You know, they contain smoking and those sort of things. Nothing to do there. And the Japanese guard walked past. No tobacco? No. I said, can you get me some? He said, no, I can't get you tobacco, but I can sell you some cigarettes. I buy it from my canteen. And I said, ah, yeah, you bring, I pay. He said, he bought it, you know, pay us 10 cigarettes a packet. He said, I bought it from my canteen at 25 cents. I sell you for 50 cents. That's good. So he only bought 2 packets. So I paid him 1 yen. And then I said, oh, you probably make 100% profit. So I also make 100%. I mean, people with money, nowhere to spend. So I sell them for $1 a packet. Get some money ready. You know, if I have a chance, I have to escape. No money, you can't do anything. So keep trading for a few weeks only. Then the fellow got transferred. So, cut off supply.
The officers, I suppose, they didn't work. Is that right?
No, they
yes. What did they do all day? How were the days?
They were all idle. Some papers, do whatever they can, to pass time.
What did you have to do for them?
I had to work in the kitchen. Because I was the only Chinese there, and Kevin said, are you Chinese every year? So you must know how to cook rice. Go to the kitchen and cook rice.
Was that a good job, to be in the kitchen?
At least you can eat more. I mean, you feed yourself first. It's not easy. There are 3 big walks. Each walk cater for 200 people. One big set of rice, I think it was 200 patties. You can't even wash the rice. I mean, how can you wash all that and then put it back, put it in it? So, I just, pour it all there, fill it with water, use an oar to stir up so all the dirt float it up and then scoop it. And then the first few days, 3 layers. The bottom layer got burned. Middle layer got very fluffy. Half roll. It's so big, you know. I think. Then I think I remember a lot of more. Our family people say, you put the rice after the water boiling. So I boil water first, then put the rice in, stir it up, clean it up, clean the top, and then it becomes better and better. Improvement. Then it was proper rice.
What else did you have to eat apart from rice? What else did they give you to eat apart from rice?
Sometimes a sack of dates, and then then we just boil it, and you know, this man has a scoop, or half a scoop, so you have some syrup, some paste, and you go with the lime. Yeah. And sometimes we just give it yam leaves. You know, the sweet potato, they have leaves.
Were you hungry? Did you get very hungry?
I don't, because I'm not in the kitchen. I get first one.
Did your family, were they able to bring you things, your family?
Well, we were completely cut off communication.
No parcels allowed? Or
what, how are they, or where are they, they don't know. They heard the people put in some sort of camp, and then I was then in Agassi.
How long were you in the camp altogether?
I got released on the 17th of September, 1942.
Why were you released early, do you think?
Because the head of the Chinese community, you know, negotiating with the Japanese, you know, you say, Greater Asia, you keep our son in camp, how can we cooperate? So, Japanese said, only 38 of us. The other two is St. George Emery. So all 40 were released. But then make us the sign in a declaration, make a note not to take up arms and fight against the Japanese Imperial Army, etc., etc. So we have to do it. And they give us a job so as to keep us there. But I don't know. Just when I got out, I became ill. I think it's a flu, the usual, you know, that time is only autumn, between hot and cold, so very easy to catch the sickness. So I didn't turn up for work. They sent a detective, Chinese detective, around and found that I was really sick. So I guess they were, when you get recover, get your report back to work. Only my mother stayed behind, but my two brothers already gone into China. She, because I was in camp, she doesn't want to leave until she knows where I am and if she can help me in anything. When I got a bit better, I told my mother, you go and live with your sister. You have to leave the place. I will escape to China, to free China. And then when I get settled down in China, I send for you. And she left, I left.
How did you get to China? Did you know how to get out?
I got to get to one of my cousins. He was then doing traveling trader, buying second hand clothes from Hong Kong, take it to China and sell it to people. So he has been going forward backward many times, so he knows the way. And I just follow him, mingle with the crowd, carrying my own baggage, just as a traveling trader. So. And we took the train, still the Japanese run the train, from Chisholm to Fanning. Then from Fanning, you walk all the way to Shuttlecock. So it's over the night at a place called Shuttlecock.
How do you spell that? Shuttlecock.
S-H-A.
Yes.
T-A-U.
Yes.
K-O-K.
Shuttlecock. So that was your first stopping place, was it?
Yes. Uh-huh. There's no stop there.
And then on to Wai Chau.
No.
Ah.
In the morning, trying to cross the border, everybody queue up. The Japanese guard would search people. And suddenly you all stop. You all can stop. Just ask if someone in front of you is enough by word. Then the word comes back. We call the young man with the Chongqing banknotes. The Chongqing, the Chinese banknotes. And thought he's a Chongqing spy. And just a slaughter. Cut open.
They cut him open?
Yeah, cut him open. They wake him up, they killed the young man. I wanted to turn back, but I know I can't. If I turn back, they must chase me. They will know that I, no reason I turn back. So just, keep on. And see what happened. So I walked past here. There was an ugly scene.
Was his body just left there?
Yeah, just left in front of the guardhouse. Everyone walked past. Then Japan just didn't search. I think he was satisfied himself that got there. He just said, then we walked straight to take it. And then a little further, there's a place, on foot all the time, a place called Yintin, or Yankan now. It's a port now. And that was stationed by the puppet army, that's Wang Jingwei's army. That's working for Japanese. They do a lot of service. They find my book. How do you get a pair of boots? I said, I was in the volunteer. I said, they're still good, can wear. So why throw away? He said, well, what are you? I said, volunteer, got released. They may have heard something, but not in detail. They searched everything from top to bottom. And I got a small note from Mr. D.C. Field, who was secretary of the board of Hong Kong Land Investment and Company. He was attending the number three company. He knew that the day before I was released, the other Chinese from Shenzhen boot camp were all put in the St. Teresa Hospital, just below Agassi camp. And I heard a Chinese voice. Quite a number of them, I went to the defense. They raised me. They're being released. And then I quickly go to the camp commander. I said, they have released him all the Chinese. I'm the only Chinese here. They may miss me out. So they tell the Japanese camp commandant. Then the next morning I was took over to the office and he asked my name in particular. I said, okay, take me back to the St. Teresa Hospital together with the other Chinese. So that was, I think, the puppet army might have known something that sometimes being released or let me go. And then we went further to Leng Kong, which is called Leng Kong. At that time, it took one whole day to walk. Stay there overnight, get on the river boat, which took about 3 days to Tam Sui and Wei Chao.
So Wei Chao was a long journey, really.
Yeah.
Yes. Were you safe when you were there? Was that a safe place to be?
There was a British Army Aid Group Advanced Headquarters there in Wei Chao. My cousin told me that if you want to reach Wei Chao, you report there, see what they can do for you. So I reported there on that way. Wei Chao.
That was their headquarters, was it?
Wei
Chao.
Advanced headquarters.
So when you reported.
I think he was then captain.
Who was?
J.D.K. C-L-A-G-U-E.
C-L-A-U-G-E.
Yeah, K. No U. C-L-A. C-U-E.
Clegg.
Yeah, Clegg.
Yes. And he was, what was his rank, captain?
He was captain. Before he left, he escaped from Kent, he was second lieutenant in the RA. He was in charge of the advanced quarter there. And of course, quite a few officers, they took a very detailed statement from me as to the conditions in camp and and I got a note from, I just mentioned the name, Lieutenant Phil, the BCC. He tried to help me, give me a note to see Mr. Lau in Hong Kong, Chinese. He was the managing director of Yamati Ferry, Hong Kong Yamati Ferry. So I hope Penny can give me a job. But I didn't see him. I took the letter. I know it's difficult. So, you know, one of those statues, Lieutenant.
Oh, yes, okay, yeah. Yes.
I used to carry books to school, right, in them. And I took off the wrapping, you know, the scheme of the Lieutenant.
Around the handle, yes.
You know, put that small piece of paper around it and put it back and took it all the way to my shop. Because they don't know me. Can you prove that you come out from Agar Street camp? I said, yes. I got an introduction letter from BC Field. And I took the red check and opened it in front of them. And then the small introductory letter. Then they asked me about the conditions in camp and so on. And there was Colin McEwen, who took statement from me. Colin, I know him because before the war, he was the PT inspector, school, physical training inspector. So he came around the school too. And I said, Mr. McEwen. Education department is like, yeah. And then I told him, I said, there's one lorry driver who took food into the camp daily, although not as some vegetable and so on. He's Chinese, and then I had spoken to him a couple of times, during the time I was there, and I think if we make contact with him, he may help deliver messages into the camp. And then I said, I think it's better to send in wireless transmitting and receiving set. See if he would allow or he would agree to take it in and turn the contact apostles Batman, also Batman, he went there, called Carter. He was a close friend with me, because he speaks Chinese too. And then Craig arranged with the Hong Kong agents, and we established contact then.
And did you get the wireless in? Did they?
But only for a few months, if I don't get caught, I begin to suspect whether the agent was working as a double agent. You see, it's not easy to send it in. He might have dealing with the Japanese. Yeah, let me in for a few months and see what happens. Yeah. Get all our coats and call sons. Then father get caught and got his head chopped off. So but we can't really prove the agent was a double agent. But they're very, very suspicious.
What other work did you do for the BAA group?
No, in fact, BAAG is a translation from a Chinese name. Yeah. It was a cover name for MI9. Yeah. MI9 is to rescue evaders and escapers. Now, when the Chinese nationalist government approved MI9 to have a unit based in China and work in Hong Kong, they made a very good suggestion to General Grimshaw, who was the military attaché in Chongqing at that time. He said, your people have to cross the border all the time. It's better to let the local authority know and the local garrison, because they may facilitate a better entry and exit. But then you must have a cover name. You can't put now and then MI9 there. So they give us the Chinese name, Ying Guan Fu Mo Ding, which is translated in the British Army A Group. So people won't know the actual word of the organization, they will know A Group, just give A yourself. So that is how.
So you became an official member, did you, of the group?
And operative.
And what did you do, apart from giving very good advice, you know, about getting wireless parts in? You were in the field?
Yeah, I went back to Shantong, Kaichong, all around that area, close to the border. It's no man's land. It's just about 10 miles or something between the two fronts of the two sides. From Chinese and Japanese.
And was that moving all the time, that bit of, you know, ground?
No,
did you find the frontiers were moving?
No. In fact, the Japanese front line is the sea. Hong Kong, they haven't come to the mainland yet. And Y Station. I was in charge of the station there.
Y Station?
Why?
Why for yellow?
XYZ, Y. Y Station.
And what were you doing? What was Y Station doing, mainly?
We have agents in Hong Kong over the Hong Kong side. I will receive intelligence reports from them, and then I send forward to Wai Chau, or instructions from Wai Chau, and forward them to occupy territory. And also, we have to supply money and so on, you know, for the people down there. So I was, you know, in charge of all these transactions.
And this money and the other goods were going to the prisoners, was it?
No, not to our agents working in Hong Kong. And I was there for until August 1943. Then Ronald Holmes, he was still captain then, Ronald Holmes and me, we sent to Taipang Bay. That is further to the east of my station. Somebody took over from me, then we were to organize what we later call Operation Frigate.
Frigate?
Yeah, Frigate. Yeah. To watch the movement of the Japanese Air Force or air and naval activities. We were there to looking for a suitable place as a base. And we distributed relief rice to the villagers and so on, get to make friends with them. And then finally, we got a house in a village called Gongleng, K-O-L-E-N-G.
Gongleng,
yeah. That is about 700 feet above sea level. a small village, only a few houses. But that is on the back of that mountain, behind Lam O, a place called Lam O. I think somewhere there they may have you. The other side, the other side faced Hong Kong and Bay Bay. You read the map. And then very primitive operation. Every day we send someone up to the peak of the that place, climbing another 700 feet every day. Just using binoculars. That we can overlook Kai Tak Airport and Lai Yu Moon Pass. So all the Japanese ships that come into Hong Kong or leaving Hong Kong, we can see. And the planes arrive in Kai Tak, we can see. And because up there, there's no electricity. So we have to ride a bicycle, you know, with dynamo for transmitting message. And that's a just a barometer to see the air pressure. We have no other equipment about the weather. We just said, look, fair enough, good sky, you know, good weather. Then the U.S. Air Force from Kuilin, they based in Kuilin, fly over and bomb Hong Kong. The first bombing, they all missed the target. They want to bomb the naval dockyard and said they drop it just next to number 2 police station, one side police station. And they all the target they missed. It's not far, in fact, it's not far.
But that was done on your intelligence, was it? You know, those bombing raids.
Yes.
It was done on the intelligence you were providing.
Yes, we provide. But then, unfortunately, we were there only for a week. On the 15th of October, 1943, a unit of the communist guerrillas suddenly came after dinner, just before dusk. Was a knock at the door and Lao Pu is took. Lao Pu is the commander of the unit. And I think we all have pistols, but we agree to open the door, but we lay down our pistol. No good to fight with them. Because they know the place, we don't know very much about the place. If we lose, we can't retreat. So might as well just see what they want. But then they, see at that time, the communists, they want to do their own strength. They just want our arms, our equipment. And of course, on the other hand, the Japanese knew something wrong there. You know, otherwise, planes won't come that far. The bomb, yeah. So they start sharing. Sharing, and then the communist guerrillas, they couldn't stand that bombardment. So better get rid of us. Easier. For their own safety. Then they captured us, blindfolded us, walked downhill. They sent us round. I think the next morning we were in Namo, on the beach of Namo. And then we stayed up in the hillside for 1, 2, 3.
We're still with the communists.
Yeah, they kept us, tied us up, and questioned us. What are you people doing here and so on, and then sort of saying we're fighting them, we're fighting with Japanese. And then, but you know, before we were taken down, it was just a coincidence. A young man of the village. He's the son of the owner of the house he rented.